We are very fortunate today to have as our speaker Jessica Foley, who is the Chief Scientific Officer of the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. I'm not a scientist. I am scientifically averse. So I am not going to try to explain what this is about. I'm simply going to say that focused ultrasound as a non-invasive means of addressing medical conditions has been around conceptually since the 50s. But there have been enormous number of advances that are making it increasingly versatile, useful, and available. And Jessica is going to be talking with us about it. Jessica is accompanied by Nora Seilheimer, a graduate of the University of Richmond and a native of nearby Greenwood. So, Jessica.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I'm really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today about focused ultrasound and about our foundation, and hopefully you'll be really interested and inspired by what we have to share with you today. So, curing with sound, it's a kind of provocative title, and what we're going to be talking about today is not always a cure, but definitely moving towards a cure using sound energy or ultrasound energy. So what we like to say about focused ultrasound is that it's the most powerful sound that you will never hear, but it's a sound that could save your life. So imagine a patient with a malignant brain tumor, and this patient is treated with sound waves instead of or in addition to more conventional types of therapy like surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, immunotherapy. And imagine that they get this treatment and there's no incisions. And so because of that, there's reduced complications, there's a shortened recovery time, maybe they don't need to stay in the hospital at all. So this is a future at this point, but the technology that could make this happen is focused ultrasound, and that's very real today. And so I'll share with you a lot of the current applications as well as the future applications of focused ultrasound. So what is focused ultrasound? So Terry briefly mentioned it. It is a non-invasive therapeutic technology. It's still fairly early stage. It can be used as an alternative or a complement to various types of conventional therapy, surgery, radiation therapy, drug delivery. And it really has a potential to transform treatment of a wide range of medical disorders. And it can do this by not only improving the outcomes for patients, but also decreasing the cost of care. So here's a gentleman suffering from essential tremor. You can see how difficult it is for him to move jelly beans from one container to another. You can see these drawings and how difficult it is for him to stay within the lines of these spirals. This is a spot deep in the brain, this blue region, and that's an area of the brain that's causing the tremor. And so this gentleman went in for focused ultrasound treatment. He was one of the first patients in the world treated for this condition at the University of Virginia. And many different beams of ultrasound were targeted to that small spot. So this was all done from outside of the skull, so he didn't have to have any incisions into his skull. So it was completely non-invasive procedure. It was done within the bore of an MRI. So the MRI was giving you these pictures that you see here, showing you the brain, and the patient was awake during this procedure, so he could tell the physicians they could do different kind of neurophysiological exams with him after each time the ultrasound was applied in the brain to see that his tremor was being reduced and to also see that he was not having any other types of side effects. But because this procedure is non-invasive, it has no incisions, there's no electrodes in the brain like as in the case of deep brain stimulation, and so this means there's a less likelihood of infection and other kinds of complications. And so just after a few shots of the ultrasound energy that would treat that spot, you can see over here with the red arrow, the region that was treated, just this dark region. And that's all it took to eliminate his tremor on one side of his body. And so you can see right after the procedure how well he can draw now. And then a month later at a follow-up visit, you can see how easily he can move the jelly beans from one container to another. So this, you know, having witnessed a few patients being treated for essential tremor, it's remarkable. The patient walks in and they, you know, look just like he does on the left, and then they walk out and they look like he does on the right. And so it's a pretty remarkable procedure. And there are many other applications that I'll get into talking about. But essential tremor is a very exciting one that was pioneered here in Charlottesville and has now received FDA approval. And is getting very near to being covered by Medicare fully. And so there are many patients that are waiting in line for this procedure once it's finally covered. Kind of switching to another area where there's a lot of advances being made is in the oncology field. So for instance, with pancreatic cancer, which of course is a very deadly cancer, you can see here a large tumor, and then the focused ultrasound can be used to treat the tumor. And so this is just showing a dark region where the ultrasound treated, and then over time, you know, the tissue that's been treated, which is now actually deadened tissue, will just kind of gradually resorb and go away. And so that's what you want to see for different tumors. What was interesting in this study of pancreatic cancer was that they also found, and they weren't trying to find this, it just occurred serendipitously, was that they treated a primary tumor in the pancreas, but then they found that some of the metastases, tumors in other sites of the body, actually reduced in size as well. And what they think is going on is that ultrasound is actually inducing an immune response. And so the ultrasound is good for treating the primary tumor, but then it kind of awakens the immune system that there is a tumor in the body. Or tumors in the body, and then the immune system kind of gets into a heightened mode and is able to seek out those cancer cells and attack them. And so that's a really exciting area that the field is moving to do more research in, is understanding that immune response more, and then seeing if you can combine the focused ultrasound with immunotherapies, which are all, you know, you've probably heard about them. They're in the news a lot these days at being very powerful treatments, but combining the focused ultrasound with those immunotherapies to maybe make an even more robust treatment that could reduce the side effects of the immunotherapy. So in principle, focused ultrasound is very similar to, as you can imagine, focusing beams of sunlight through a magnifying glass and burning a hole in a leaf, except that in this case, you're applying the many beams of ultrasound that converge. You're converging those spots on a tumor or another target that's deep in the body. But it's still that same principle where we're only at the point where the beams converge are you actually going to get a biological effect in the tissue, or you're going to get a change in the tissue. Everywhere else that the beams pass through, so whether that's the skull or fat or muscle, everywhere else is not going to be harmed. It's just going to be very low level energy, kind of like ultrasound imaging that you know might get at the doctor. And so it's only at that point of convergence do you get this effect. And what's really exciting about this treatment is that there's a very sharp demarcation between treated tissue and untreated tissue. So it's almost like, you know, a knife's edge, except that you're, or even more precise than that, but you, of course you're not using a knife, but there's only about, you know, a tenth of a millimeter between the treated and untreated tissue. So that's great if you're in an area like the brain where there's obviously a lot of sensitive structures that you wouldn't want to treat. And then also if you're, you know, anywhere else in the body where there might be a structure nearby, a tumor, and you want to avoid that structure. So I mentioned the, you know, the where the beams converge, you get profound effects. So we've talked, some of the conditions I've talked about so far, that effect is heat. So you're, you know, just like burning that hole in that leaf, you're getting a lot of heat just at that spot that's killing the tissue. But you can get other effects too that are not heating. You can use the ultrasound to make cells more susceptible to drugs, so that can aid in drug delivery. There's a structure, and I'll show you a picture later in the brain. So in vessels in the brain, there's actually a barrier that is called the blood-brain barrier, and it makes it difficult for drugs to move from the bloodstream into the brain. And what the ultrasound can do is, so the mechanical aspects of the ultrasound, it can act kind of like poking holes in saran wrap. So if you imagine the vessels are lined with saran wrap, and then the ultrasound creates tiny holes, and those holes will allow the drug to flow through into the brain. And then within a few hours, the holes close up. So that's a really exciting area that could potentially enable drugs that are used to treat Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or Huntington's disease, things where right now there are therapies that may or may not be able to get into the brain. It would be able to help those therapies get into the brain. So there's a lot of clinical trials going on in that. So this is just briefly showing you some of these different types of bioeffects. This is just showing you the ways of destroying the tissue cells or the cells. This is another way of drug delivery. So imagine that you have, in a normal sense, for say chemotherapy, traditional chemotherapy, you have drug that's flowing throughout your body. But what you'd like to be able to do is deliver in high concentration the drug just to the site of the tumor without getting it elsewhere in the body and causing all of those other toxicities. So what you can do here is you can actually take what's known as a microbubble. It's just a very, you can see it compared to a red blood cell, just a very small sphere like made out of lipid, and you can actually load that microbubble or those microbubbles with chemotherapy or with other drugs. And then those microbubbles can be injected into the body systemically, but the drug is bound up inside the microbubble. It's encapsulated inside, and so the drug isn't causing any effects in the body at that moment. The chemotherapy then within the microbubble could go throughout the body. And this is just showing it showing up in the liver. But now you can apply ultrasound at the site of your tumor, say a liver tumor, and it kind of pops the bubbles, the microbubbles, and releases the drug only at the point where you've applied the ultrasound. So now you effectively have a very localized way of delivering the chemotherapy, and then you don't have those systemic effects throughout your body. So this is a very exciting area. This is not in the clinic right now, but there are a lot of different groups all over the world that are trying to get this to patients as quickly as possible. And then I mentioned the immuno effects, the immune system effects. So essentially, you know, one of the problems is that a lot of cancers have a way of camouflaging themselves from the immune system. And so what the focus ultrasound can do is actually kind of destroy that camouflage so that the immune system then can detect these cancer cells and start to attack them. And so that's what we're hoping is going to be a really, you know, promising way of treating cancer, is using the ultrasound to kind of awaken the immune system. And then finally, this is just, I mentioned the blood-brain barrier opening, but this is just kind of showing it in a picture form. Again, you would be able to treat a very small region of the brain. And this just shows a MRI contrast agent, just showing that region of the brain, after being treated with the ultrasound, is open. That area, the blood-brain barrier, is open. So then you could imagine coming in with some sort of a drug to treat. In the case of these patients, they were Alzheimer's patients, but to treat patients with Alzheimer's with a powerful drug. This slide is just representative of the fact that you know, focused ultrasound is a very diverse field in terms of the different clinical applications that people are looking into, and that means that there's a whole lot of different devices that are being developed. So this one here in the middle is actually the unit that's used to treat conditions in the brain. So they have this at UVA, and the patient lies here, and then there, this is the ultrasound device, which is kind of like a large hockey helmet. So it's a hemisphere, and that would be used to deliver the ultrasound. And then in the case of this one, the patient would be inside the MRI when the treatment is performed. But then there are other devices that are very different. This is a device that is guided by ultrasound imaging. So this is the ultrasound imaging here. This is the focused ultrasound therapy system. And then you see it's kind of like a robotic system or robotic arm. And they put it, this is used to treat breast cancer right now. And so the patient is just lying on the table and they just move the device to the patient. So, and this one actually is also at UVA. There's an exciting trial going on at UVA for patients with metastatic breast cancer. And they're using this focused ultrasound system, and they're combining that with an immunotherapy, with a therapy called Keytruda, which you may have heard about because Jimmy Carter was treated with Keytruda, and that helped him, you know, go into remission for his metastatic melanoma. So it's a very exciting trial that's going on here in Charlottesville, and hopefully they'll get some great results that will lead to future work. But you can just see there's many different types of devices here for treatment. And then this is just representative of some of the companies that are involved in focused ultrasound. There's now over 50 companies worldwide that are involved in treating focused ultrasound. And most of them are fairly small companies. And they are, you know, they have specific clinical areas that they're trying to develop devices to treat. Some of them are looking at many diseases. Some of them are looking at just one. But part of what we try to do at the foundation is kind of learn what all these companies are doing, and then if there's ways that we can help them or help, you know, direct investors to them or things like that, so that they can hopefully help commercialize this, because obviously, you know, it's going to take that to get to the point where it's really going to be available to patients everywhere. And this slide is an ever-changing slide, but you probably can't read any of it, which is fine. But there are now over 100 different clinical applications for focused ultrasound that are in various stages of development. So you can see there are a lot of neurological applications. So I mentioned the essential tremor, and then there's also Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, brain tumors. So there's a variety of neurological conditions. There's a variety of cancer applications you can see here. And really the point of this chart is, one, to show you that there's a lot of different applications, but two, the further something moves along this pathway with all these different colored boxes, that means it's, you know, moving towards the point where it's fully approved by either the FDA or some other country's regulatory system, and it's fully reimbursed by insurers. And as you can see, there are not many applications that have reached all the way to this blue area. And so, again, that's part of what we're trying to do with the foundation, is help push as many of these applications as far, you know, towards the reimbursement phase as is possible. And then this just gives you an idea, just over the last 5 years, how much the field has changed. So there's probably about more than double the number of clinical applications that are being investigated in 2017 as opposed to 2012. So the field is really growing rapidly. And then this just shows you kind of an idea of what different conditions are being treated or how many patients are being treated. So now I think this number has grown, but there's about 168,000 patients worldwide that have been treated with focused ultrasound. And the biggest areas are prostate diseases, which is mostly prostate cancer, and uterine fibroids, which has been around for a long time in terms of as an application. You can see some liver cancer there. The brain is just this small region here, but now there have been over 1,000 patients treated for brain conditions. And you can see here kind of most of those are for essential tremor and then, you know, Parkinson's and a few other things. But it's you know, really interesting to see some of these areas where it's really being utilized a lot. So, you know, when you talk about a technology like this that is very disruptive and really potentially transformative, the process to get this from, you know, a new idea for a new clinical application all the way to the point of adoption, clinical adoption, so that patients everywhere can have this treatment, it's a very long process. It can be very complicated and often inefficient. And so you can see here, and I won't go through these, but just some of the different steps that are involved in getting from that new idea to the, you know, full clinical adoption. And it's also a very complex ecosystem in terms of the different stakeholders involved, right? So obviously there's those that you would think about, the physicians, patients, the medical providers, the insurers who are paying for this, but also various other government entities, the NIH, who's funding a lot of research, the FDA, of course, who needs to make sure that things are safe and effective. So there's a lot of different players involved in this, and they may all have their own agendas and timelines. And so that creates a lot of impediments to getting these new applications out to patients. And again, I won't go through these, but there's a lot of barriers to adoption. And so several years ago, back in 2006, Dr. Neil Cassell, who started our foundation, was kind of learning about focused ultrasound and wondering why this isn't out there, why everyone doesn't know what it is, and why patients everywhere aren't being able to have this treatment. And he realized, you know, all of these impediments as we just described, and kind of looked around for how do I overcome these? Is there a model to follow to overcome these impediments? And there wasn't, and so he created his own model, which was the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. So we were formed in 2006 here in Charlottesville, and we're unique in that we're a medical research, education, and advocacy organization that may be similar to some disease foundations that you're familiar with, except we're focused on advancing this technology. So we want to advance the clinical adoption and development of focused ultrasound for treatment of all of those different applications that I showed on that rainbow chart. And so we really view ourselves, and I think the field views us as a catalyst to push forward those efforts. So really what we're doing is, you know, identifying areas in the clinical application world. So talking with physicians and identifying areas where there are really unmet needs. So some areas that are, you know, there's unmet needs like brain tumors, right? Glioblastomas, that's a huge unmet need. Or again, some of these neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And so identifying those unmet needs, and then kind of setting priorities for the focused ultrasound community in terms of how they can best address those needs. So we're, you know, whether it's through our funding or holding workshops to help people determine, you know, here are the key areas that we should focus on, and this is kind of the roadmap to help us get there. And a big part of what we're trying to do within the research community is change the culture so that everyone that's involved in this effort is putting the patient at the center of their universe and thinking about how we can most quickly get these treatments to patients. So we're operating with a sense of urgency, and we're all willing to collaborate with each other and kind of share in the glory, which scientists are often not willing to do, to try to move things faster. And so we're really just taking human capital, which is all of us at the foundation who are working hard, as well as this whole research community, and also financial capital. We're raising a lot of money, and Nora can speak to that. She's excellent at doing that, to try to help move this field forward. So I'll run through these slides kind of quickly about the foundation, but we're trying to ultimately, above all else, I think, is foster this collaboration and really build a spirit of collaboration within the community. So that would be researchers who are in academic institutions, as well as clinicians, as well as industry, you know, members of industry, all the different members of the ecosystem that I showed on that slide before, trying to get everybody working together to try to move focused ultrasound across the finish line for a lot of these clinical applications. We're also helping to fund a lot of research in the field. So we're, I list here some of our focus areas. I mentioned the brain and specifically glioblastoma before. I mentioned this powerful way of combining focused ultrasound with cancer immunotherapy for better treating cancer, pancreatic cancer being a specific area. We also have interest in a lot of pediatric applications. And a newer program is veterinary applications. So actually using focused ultrasound for maybe treating tumors in dogs or cats. And the interesting thing there is that not only is it an alternative treatment and maybe a better treatment for certain animals, but what we can learn from that experience can also then be translated into human medicine. So that's kind of an interesting program that we've started. And then we're doing a lot to kind of bring the field together and connect researchers in our field with researchers in other fields. So we have a big international scientific symposium that we sponsor every 2 years, and the next one is coming up in October of this year in Northern Virginia. So we always hold this in the DC area, so it's really easy to get members of the FDA there, to get members from the NIH there, as well as people from all over the world flying in. And then we hold a lot of workshops that are around specific clinical areas. So we've recently held workshops, for instance, in Alzheimer's disease, where we would get together, not only people in focused ultrasound that are trying to develop Alzheimer's treatments, but clinicians who are treating patients with Alzheimer's, neuroscientists, and get everyone in a room trying to identify, you know, how can focused ultrasound be used to treat this disease, and what do we need to do to get it moving forward. And so there's a lot of workshops like that we hold. We're also funding fellowships and internships to try to cultivate the next generation of researchers, because obviously we can't, you know, this isn't something that's going to be, this problem isn't going to be solved in 5 years. And so we're going to need to have, you know, the next generation working hard to come up with answers and solutions. And then we try to do a good job of kind of making the general public and other groups aware of what's going on in the field. We have a newsletter, actually back on your corner, back in that corner right by the door when you walked in. We have some material that you can take. I think it's our annual report, so you can see what we did in the last year at the foundation, what kind of activities. There's also a sign-up sheet if you'd like to give us your email. We'll be happy to subscribe you to our newsletter, and then monthly you'll be receiving newsletters which have a lot of great information in them. And then you'll also get some other emails about the foundation. And I'd also encourage you to visit our website at fusfoundation.org. And there you can find a lot of information about what's going on in focused ultrasound. We also help to establish luminary sites for focused ultrasound. We call them centers of excellence. The first one was actually established here at UVA, I think back in, I want to say 2009 or 2010. UVA has been such a pioneer in developing this technology, but now there are many other centers of excellence, as you can see there. And we like to have those because those then serve as like showcase sites for what's going on in the field. And they're sites where they're really excellent at collaborating across different departments in the hospital and in the research groups, which are often like the schools of engineering or different biology fields. And they often are partnering with industry to try to, you know, develop new devices and things like that. So it's really great to have those centers. And then we do a lot to try to increase awareness. So obviously that's what we're happy to do here today, is to just educate others about this technology. Something that, you know, we feel like every one of us will probably be a patient or knows someone who could be a potential patient that could benefit from focused ultrasound. So it's great to just spread the word so that people are aware of it. And another way of doing that is just, you know, trying to get the word out through more traditional media sources. So we do a lot of that. And then we've done some pretty interesting things. Here on the left is a book. You can download this book on Amazon. It's called The Tumor, written by John Grisham. That John Grisham. So he's on our board of directors. And several years ago, he was very inspired to kind of, well, he realized that a really great way that he could raise, you know, help us is to just raise awareness of focused ultrasound. I mean, he is the best storyteller. And so he was amazing enough to write this short book about focused ultrasound, sort of chronicling a young father who's has a brain tumor. And, you know, here's what his life would be like, or here's what would happen to him today with kind of conventional medicine. And imagine a time maybe 10 years down the road when focused ultrasound is available, and maybe it wouldn't cure him, but it could prolong his life. It could improve his quality of life, so he has, you know, good years left to spend with his family. And then the end of the book kind of gives you more information about focused ultrasound and the foundation. And so that book has now been downloaded almost a million times. It's a free book. And so any of you can find that by going to Amazon, or you can find it on our website. But that's just one example, and probably the biggest example of how we've been able to raise awareness about focused ultrasound. We also do a lot to try to partner with other organizations. So, you know, there are so many great foundations out there, like the Michael J. Fox Foundation or Epilepsy, as mentioned, as shown here. And they're funding, you know, great research to try to cure these diseases. So we've partnered with them to fund some work in focused ultrasound. And so then that's a great way for us to really leverage the generous donations that we receive to go as far as possible by partnering with these other organizations. And we do, you know, obviously we're involved in kind of helping overcome barriers that might exist in regulatory and reimbursement processes. But overall, everything that we're doing is about the patient. So the patients are always central to our mission, and we're always thinking about kind of all the actions that we make and how this action would impact getting this to patients as quickly as possible. And so we try to position ourselves at the center of all of those variety of stakeholders that are involved in this process. And ultimately, you know, we imagine that with the standard of care, we would imagine that without the foundation, ultrasound, focused ultrasound would become a standard of care at some point, right? And the timeline is probably still a ways out, but we would get there at some point. And so what we're trying to do with the investment of dollars and the various activities we're doing is really just move that timeline to the left. So shorten that time. And by doing that, then we can, you know, impact a lot more lives, saving more lives by saving time.
When I first heard I had Parkinson's, I was very surprised. Sorry. I always thought of it being an older person's illness, and I've always seen people in wheelchairs. So I thought I was going to lose all my mobility. So it was very frightening. Walking I couldn't do because of the dystonia with my toes. I couldn't run. I couldn't go hiking. Basically anything that required movement, I couldn't do it. And my leg would bounce uncontrollably. It would hyperextend and actually lock backwards. It was very, very painful. I couldn't walk, so I had to be taken in a wheelchair to the hospital. With each treatment, I could feel myself getting stronger and stronger. My symptoms were getting less and less, and my pain was getting less. Then the clinical trial director, she looked at me and she says, "Get up, you can walk." And I thought, I can walk. I can walk. I knew I could. It was amazing. I got there in the wheelchair, unable to walk, and immediately following it, I walked to the room. It was a miracle. The focused ultrasound treatment has given me back my life. I've been able to go on walks. I've been able to run. Being able to ride my bike again. It's a miracle.
So that's a pretty powerful story from Kimberly, who's a patient treated at the University of Maryland a couple years ago. And she still has, you know, she's still riding her bike, and she's had really excellent results with this treatment. So again, just to sort of summarize, you know, we're looking to take generous donations, and with the help of ultrasound, produce miracles that can treat an innumerable number of diseases and ultimately bring health and happiness to patients' lives. So I thank you for your attention and happy to take any questions and have any discussion.
We've got I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I found it just fascinating. We podcast these sessions, so we have microphones. If you have a question, raise your hand, and somebody will come with you or come to you with a microphone and speak into the microphone, please.
Thank you. That was very well done. My question was
louder, please.
My question was originally, how far out are this from being fairly widespread? Clinically reliable procedure for people. And then I heard you say 10 years. Do you think it's 10 years or less?
So, I mean, for some things like the essential tremor, so now that's already been approved by the FDA and is very nearing the point of getting insurance reimbursement. And then that'll be here. You know, hopefully within a matter of months, that will be a procedure that's available and would be covered by Medicare. For patients to receive at certain locations, not every hospital has the machine to do this, but there would be, obviously UVA does, but there would be probably like 10 or 12 sites in the country that would then be able to treat that. But some of these other conditions might be further down the road. So it kind of depends. But there's still a ways to go to the point where, you know, it would be fully like standard of care. And I think that's what we're after, right? So we want to get to a point where all the hospitals would have the equipment and, you know, all physicians that are treating a certain type of cancer or a certain type of a neurological disorder would say, this is a treatment that, you know, I can offer my patients. And we're further, you know, that's still going to take a while. But that's what we're aiming for.
Virginia?
It is? Okay.
Yeah.
This is a sort of a strange question. I don't know if you can have the answer. But you think back 40 years ago, I can go back further than that, exactly what everything cost and what we pay into Medicare and what Medicare costs were. With this, we're adding much, much more, and we haven't been able to explain to the world how much more it's going to cost to do the things that they are going to expect in the future. How do you get that across to the powers that be?
That's a challenging question. I think that for something like this, for all new technology, a lot of times people say that new technology just drives up healthcare costs, and so why should we, you know, invest in it? But in the case of this technology specifically, well, obviously, I mean, there's studies that show that new medical technology actually does a lot to decrease the healthcare costs. But in the case here, you know, a non-invasive therapy like this, If you're able to reduce the need for surgery for patients that ordinarily would have a brain surgery, like a deep brain stimulation, and have to spend some time in the hospital and then potentially have complications or need to come in and get hardware replaced every few years or things like that, you end up drastically reducing the cost for the kind of lifetime cost for treating a single patient for that disease. So it gets into kind of looking at it in a different way, that maybe you have the cost of an individual procedure might be a little bit more, but if it allows you to reduce these other kind of downstream things that could happen, like the infections or the complications or the need for additional therapies down the road, that sort of thing, then you end up reducing the cost overall. So there hasn't really been a lot of good cost analysis done, but I think you could make the case for how it would ultimately be better for the whole system.
How is the focused ultrasound directed to its target? Targets which are very small and which obviously I don't know how it knows exactly where to go.
So you would, first you are using imaging. So in the case of the brain, you're using MRI, but in some cases you might be using ultrasound imaging. So that gets you a view of the area and you see this is, a certain area I want to treat. And then with the ultrasound, in some of these devices, there will be many different, what they call ultrasound transducers. So you could have if I'm holding out my hand, you could have many different kind of transducers around there, and each of them would be able to deliver its own beam of ultrasound, and then you could use electronics to steer the beams in different directions so that you could make sure that all of the beams can converge at the point where you actually want to treat. So that's kind of, in terms of the brain system, that's how they're doing that. Is they're really kind of using electronics to steer the different ultrasound beams. Does that make sense? Okay.
Bob McGrath?
You told us, showed us a number of wonderful successes, and you showed, I'm thinking particularly, the tumor, the pancreatic tumor. Is there anything different about that compared to treating tumors in other organs? What doesn't work so well?
So really the limitation is obviously in the case of cancer, there's always the limitation of, you want to catch it as early as possible. But specific with the ultrasound, different tissue types might kind of absorb ultrasound energy better or worse. If there's a lot of fatty tissue, sometimes the ultrasound doesn't absorb as well. So sometimes people have seen that in the case of breast cancer, depending on the structure of the tumor, if there's a lot of kind of fat surrounding that area, it might be harder to get the temperature that you need. But there's usually ways of kind of accommodating for that. You just have to kind of change your ultrasound parameters that you're using. But it means that kind of with each different tumor type, you need to have these clinical trials to kind of understand how to do it. And then the other issue with ultrasound is that it doesn't travel through air. So if you were trying to go into the lung, for instance, where there's a lot of air, then that could be an issue. There are people trying to do things with the lung, like filling it with fluid, which doesn't sound that great, they would have to do it in a very controlled, safe way. But if they were doing that, then they could conceivably use the ultrasound. But it might be that for certain areas like the lung, it may be not the best option. But for other areas like liver, kidney, pancreas, all the abdominal areas, it should be fine. Another thing that needs to be considered in the in some of the abdominal areas is that those organs might move with respiration. And so the kind of timing of when you deliver the energy is something. And then if you have to treat something that is behind the ribs, you have to kind of develop ways, again, of focusing so that you can focus in between the ribs. But all of those are kind of like technology challenges that can be solved. It's just going to take some time to do that.
Ma'am.
Yeah. Hi. You had many charts about the numbers of applications that have been done, but you didn't have any charts about success rate. Did you keep records about that? How many people were successfully treated?
So these are all different, you know, the examples of these clinical applications. These are, in terms of patients that have been treated, these are coming from many different clinical trials performed with many different devices, many different companies. And so, unfortunately, there's not like one central organization or person or team that's keeping track of all of those treatments and in terms of the successes and failures, because particularly when the companies are running these clinical trials, that's their internal stuff. And so one thing that we're trying to encourage from the foundation is to try to develop what they call registries. So that would essentially get many different sites around the world. We're developing a registry for pancreatic cancer. So many different sites that might be using different companies' equipment and treating different groups of patients to all take their data and put it into one central location that we could help manage that, so that then we would have that data for a condition that's, you know, really important like pancreatic cancer. But unfortunately, it's, you know, with all the patients that have been treated in the past and stuff, it's impossible to know.
Microphone,
yeah.
Ma'am.
Yeah.
Microphone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all your information. You say that there's impediments before the government will approve this for payment, like Medicare. Can you list the top three impediments, starting with the one that's most important, the top three impediments?
Just related to government or in general? I think the biggest impediment has been the insurance reimbursement, but that's not just specific to government reimbursement, you know, Medicare, but private insurers. And the challenge there is that when these new technologies are being developed, obviously, whether it's the government or whether it's the private insurers, they're looking for a lot of clinical evidence. You know, they're looking for a certain amount of patients or, you know, different types of evidence. And so sometimes that's the issue, is that they deem that it's still investigational and they want to see more evidence. And then other times, you know, there is a little bit of the cynical view sometimes where, particularly with some of the private insurers, is that, you know, say for something like essential tremor, if someone has essential tremor and it's not controlled by medication and it's very severe, they either have to sort of just grin and bear it, or they can have deep brain stimulation, which is, you know, requires drilling through the skull and having the electrode go deep in the brain, which could work. And some patients, that they have success there. But there are a lot of patients who don't want to do that. And so they, to the insurer, are just not really treated, right? Like the insurer is not covering them because they're not asking for any of these expensive treatments. But then when something like focused ultrasound becomes available that is non-invasive, all of a sudden many of these patients do want to be treated. And so now they're becoming a huge cost, potential cost to the insurance company. So that's another potential area. And I mean, I can't say that that is why they're not covering it, but that's, you know, that's a potential. So again, when you have a technology that is disruptive, as they say, like focus ultrasound is, where it really is like disrupting the way you would treat patients, or, you know, the way the hospital would treat them and things, you do face some of those challenges.
So it's not just a lobbying problem.
Yeah, it's not
problem.
It's not purely lobbying. Although, I mean, lobbying could help, and I mean, particularly when it's trying to speed up maybe the process of the Medicare approval. But with the private insurers, you know, I think it's, there still could be some challenges. But hopefully they'll just eventually follow suit from Medicare, right?
Ma'am?
Yes, my question is with regard to Alzheimer's research.
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking at tackling the plaques and the tangles, or what is the approach when you say you're starting to look at Alzheimer's research?
So there's most of the work so far has looked at the reduction of amyloid plaques. And so what was found in mouse models of Alzheimer's was that just using the ultrasound to open the blood-brain barrier, not delivering any drug or anything, but just using the ultrasound to open the blood-brain barrier, caused some mechanisms that are still trying to be understood to occur that caused a reduction of the plaques, so, and improved behavior and cognition in the mice. So that was really exciting results that two different laboratories kind of independently found. And that led to the creation of a clinical trial that we helped fund that took place in Toronto. And that was just five patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's, and they're trying to just confirm that it was feasible and safe to open the blood-brain barrier for a short period of time. Again, in the first stage of these trials, they're not even looking for the impact on the disease, but they did do some imaging of the amyloid plaques, and we don't have those results yet, but I think they're going to be published soon. But I think they found, you know, maybe some potential signs that if they move forward and they actually maybe try to deliver a therapy as well, that they could have some impact on reducing the plaques. So that's one area. Then there are some other researchers that are, again, still in the mouse models that are looking at the tau and the, you know, the more neuro, the or the fibrillary tangles, as you're talking about. So there are people looking at that as well. But that's that stage, or that research is a little earlier.
Ma'am?
I'm curious about how this practically works out in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Is this likely to be a separate specialty that develops, or would an oncologist just use this as one of her tools, and a surgeon use this as a different kind of scalpel, or how would that work?
So all of the above, potentially, and that's actually one of the big challenges as well, is that when I talk about it being a disruptive technology, it's also disruptive in terms of like how doctors treat patients. So, you know, these treatments require imaging, for instance. And so initially, when some of these procedures came about, say for uterine fibroids, radiologists were actually kind of controlling this. Well, that created some challenge because most of the patients that have fibroids, they're getting diagnosed from their gynecologist, not their radiologist. And then the gynecologist has ways of treating them, which usually involves surgery. So it was like if you were going to the gynecologist, you would not really learn about this radiology procedure unless your gynecologist wanted to kind of collaborate with the radiologist, and that created some complexity. What we would hope is that it would become a tool that was available in the hospital for different specialties to use, but it's just, you know, it isn't there yet, because usually it's like one department is responsible, is the one that champions it and helps get it purchased, and then they think they kind of, you know, control it, right? And so hopefully, I mean, I like your idea of like a specialty, you know, if this became its own specialty, like radiation oncology, you know, then that could be maybe the way to go. But I think different hospitals also do things differently. So some places maybe are operating more like that, and then others, they want to just focus on like the neurosurgery department controls it or something like that. Yeah.
Patterson?
I noticed that glioblastoma was one of the diseases that you might want to treat. Glioblastoma multiforme is one of the most virulent, most mm-hmm. devastating brain tumors. Have you had any success in addressing that?
So
US?
Not clinically, really. But that's one of the areas that we're investing a lot in terms of funding projects that are preclinical, so still in the animal research stage. So we're funding a lot of work in, again, kind of maybe pairing the ultrasound with an immunotherapy or the blood-brain barrier application, where you could help open the blood-brain barrier and it be enable delivery of drugs that ordinarily wouldn't, you know, get to the tumor in as high concentration. So those are kind of some of the areas where we think there's a potential, rather than just the heating of the tumor, because the glioblastomas tend to be more... They tend to be more kind of spread out, or they have these tentacles and things, and so just like shooting them with a little bit of ultrasound heat is probably not going to solve the problem. We're not there yet, but we're hoping that some of these applications can help improve that treatment.
Jessica, I'd like to follow up on Madison's question. One of the current victims of glioblastoma is Senator John McCain. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of friends in Charlottesville, people who, like myself, like one of Nora's uncles, went to school with him at Episcopal High School. Is John a candidate for focused ultrasound?
Well, again, there aren't any clinical trials right now for treating glioblastoma with focused ultrasound. So, unfortunately, they're, you know, right now he wouldn't be a candidate because there aren't any trials. So, yeah.
This has to be something that many countries are interested in. What other countries are you working with that are in collaboration, and where are they on this?
So there are a lot of countries that are involved in this work, and several of them have applications that are further along than here, in part because historically it's been a bit faster to get regulatory approval in some other countries, although that's changing, because some of those countries, you just had to prove something was safe. You didn't have to really prove that it was effective. But now those rules are changing a little bit. But France, there's a lot of things going on in France. Canada, the one specific site in Toronto has really been pioneering a lot of these brain applications, and particularly using the ultrasound to open the blood-brain barrier for treating Alzheimer's or tumors. They're pioneering that there. And so they've been able to get those clinical trials approved, or the company has basically made the decision to kind of go to Canada first before coming to the U.S. But those are two. There's also a lot of things going on in various countries in Europe. Italy has a lot of work going on. Germany, you know. So, and then in Asia, there has been, particularly China, but throughout Asia, there's been a lot of focused ultrasound work for many, many years, and a lot of companies. It's hard to kind of keep track of all of that, in part because of the language barrier. So. Us connecting with researchers and clinicians and things in Asia has been a little bit more difficult, but we're trying to get a handle of that better to see what's going on over there. Yep.
Are there other questions? Well, please join me in thanking Jessica and Nora for an outstanding presentation.